when a local news outlet received a press release from the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office on January 23rd, it reported the death of an inmate. That inmate was 36-year-old Atascadero resident Andrew Holland. Holland spent 46 hours locked in a restraint chair and wasn't allowed to get up, and he died of a blood clot. Holland's death has since become a symbol for the treatment of mentally ill patients in jail because Holland had schizophrenia. It's also become a key issue in the current election. It's currently the foremost topic in the race of county sheriff who runs the jail. Incumbent Ian Parkinson is fighting to keep his job, and challenger Greg Clayton's platform is figuratively built on Andrew Holland's case. KCBX News invited both into the studio, and we'll hear first from Parkinson. Here is San Luis Obispo County Sheriff Ian Parkinson speaking with KCBX News Director Greta Mart and me.
Can you give me three concrete examples of policies or procedures that have changed since Andrew Holland's death?
Can I give you more than three?
Sure.
Okay. Well, the most important thing are the first things enacted, a policy change on the limit on how long somebody can be restrained. So it's limited to 2 hours. After 2 hours, they either have to go to the hospital, have to go to mental health, or have to be released, period. There's no exceptions to it. The second is related to that, and not specifically to that case, but in general, after learning all this, is that we had a policy that when somebody was a danger to themselves or others and went into a safety cell, that it was up to mental health to release them. In other words, say that it's okay for them to get out of that cell. I changed that to 2 days. 2 days is the max, with one exception. If a psychiatrist signs for one extra day because they're making arrangements or they're getting on medication or something, those are policies that I made that I gave to the health agency because they, of course, up to operationally a month ago, were in charge of medical mental health and I didn't have control over it. So I drafted those policies and gave them to them and said, moving forward, this is what my policy is. So they have to make that decision on their behalf. So those are the two most significant changes as far as early on. The chief medical officer position was probably the most significant change that the department's ever had in that area, because with the chief medical officer having oversight over medical and mental health in the jail and reporting to me as opposed to mental health and us having operational control over that, it's a significant change. The building and the opening of the mental health unit, which is now, we've received $300,000 from private funding from community members, which went largely unreported. We did a press conference. The big donor, Jim Copeland from locally, but also French Hospital, gave $50,000. But we reached the $300,000 point, and our goal is $500,000, and that is being raised through the Sheriff's Advisory Foundation. That is a significant change.
I'm sorry. That's to build a psychiatric unit in the county jail.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. So we're. I think we're going to hit the $500,000 mark because we did $300,000 in about less than 4 weeks. So those are pretty significant changes. And then the last one that I think is important is we went to the board with about 2 weeks ago, and that is involuntary medication.
Right.
They've never been allowed to do involuntary medication. And as we know, that when somebody has reached that point with their mental illness that they can't make sound decisions, it requires a court order. So it's not our decision to do that. It has to be presented to a court and done in a court process. But it allows people to get medicated who can't make those decisions, and that we can actually then move into treatment, because without them stabilized, they can't move into treatment. So we went 2 weeks ago. So we've done all this stuff in the last just month and a half, I would say, is when we got the chief medical officer position.
Okay, great. All right.
And just to clarify, the chief medical officer, have they started yet?
Yes.
They have? How's
yes.
that going?
It's going really well. She is I think amazing. I think she not only is she very much focused on patient care, medical and mental health. Her husband's actually a Stanford ER doc, so she actually has some time and knowledge through, you know, kind of vicariously through her husband. But it has changed things, I'd say, pretty significantly, pretty quickly.
Okay. I was at your Santa Margarita Town Hall, and when the subject of Andrew Holland came up, I remember several people asking why no discipline action had been made within the sheriff's office, and I just wondered if you could take some time and elaborate on that.
Well, I'll mention that because two things. One, you got to understand that, and we released the county council released phone records because that was a point of question whether or not I would had weighed in on the initial detention or restraint, and when did I know? So we released phone records. The phone records from the moment I got notified of it on Sunday, the phone calls subsequent to that were identified in the press release that I called our detective commander, our IA commander, internal affairs commander, and they called out their people for the investigation. So it occurs the team comes into the jail. They don't work in the jail that came in. So the IA commander's role is to focus on, is there any misconduct? Is there, you know, policy and procedures that are being violated that would rise to the level of misconduct on the paper level, on the improper conduct, such as did they abuse him, strike him, do anything that is criminal, they would also uncover that. And we follow the policy. They follow the policy, regardless of whether, you know, people after believe that the policy was flawed. Certainly I do, in the sense that never thought we'd be in this situation, but there was no discovered misconduct.
Have there been any promotions?
Oh, I have promotions all the time. The captain of the jail during this time retired, and yeah, I promoted a captain, and promoted two lieutenants, numerous sergeants, numerous senior deputies in the jail. So those occur all the time.
If there was no discipline action, but yet there might have been some promotions, do you think that sends any sort of message to people about the sheriff's office?
Well, I mean, I guess I guess if you thought about it in that way, like it's a like it's some form of I'll use the word conspiracy, or that there was somebody that got promoted because they did something exceptionally well during that. No, the answer is absolutely no. I think the reality is if you lose your station manager, regardless of what time, you still have to operate effectively. So when you have retirements, both in patrol and in custody, you have to make promotions. And we have a set process for, you know, interviews. I just don't make a arbitrary selection. We have a pretty, you know, straight process of how somebody promotes. So 100% unrelated to anything related to anything that goes on other than their long-term conduct or promotability, all those things come into play just like any other promotion would be in selecting any other job out there.
Moving forward, should you be reelected with this whole incident that happened with Andrew Holland behind you, how do you plan to move forward? How do you plan to grow should you win the office?
Yeah, this was a failure of the system completely. We had three different departments involved. We all three had some form of responsibility. It was noted by the grand jury last year that the system was flawed, and we knew that. I go back, I pulled up a white paper today that I had done in 2013 on mental health that was geared at lack of communication, not getting communication with mental health employees and therapists, not just in the jail in general. It's a general feeling with law enforcement because it's protected information, but it's valuable information. If you know about somebody's mental illness and you know that's the behavior that you're seeing exhibited as opposed to drugs or alcohol or something like that, that's important information that we were lacking and still are very much lacking because of protection laws. Families can't even get it once they turn 18. So the communication aspect is a huge issue. And the second part of that is keeping people with mental illness out of jail. And I think when we're talking about that, that's part of what the Stepping Up program has proposed or why we move forward with it. But as I pointed out to one of the supervisors, you know, Stepping Up, people with mental illness come on our radar because of their behavior. So whether it's the street of San Luis, when you're walking downtown San Luis and you see somebody yelling at a light stand or something, you go, this person needs help, to somebody that commits a violent, serious crime. They come on our radar. I think the plan moving forward is kind of twofold. One, I think fundamentally, if you look at all the things that I have changed in the last 7.5 years, I would put that record up against any sheriff in the last 100 years in the county. And I'm not saying that to be, you know, to brag. I'm saying that, you know, certainly it's a collective effort. But those ideas, those steps moving forward in order to change things for the better, I have a long time proven practice and history of showing. I can demonstrate that on numerous levels in numerous areas of the department to affect change. So I think that's important moving forward, that A, that you know I'm not saying I'm going to do something. I've proven that I can do something, and I've made the changes that are extremely important. Internal affairs is a great example, because there was no internal affairs when I got there, and that was my commitment coming in, that we needed that. And I brought in a guy that was retired LAPD that ran internal affairs for LAPD, which has some 350 employees just in that unit alone, with an amazing amount of experience, because discipline is extremely important. I have not been light on discipline. I mean, I think if you ask anybody in that department, if you looked at my list of disciplinary actions, you know, across the board over that period of time, you're going to see a tremendous number of suspensions, terminations, reprimands, because I've made it very clear that I'm not going to tolerate, you know, improper behavior. I'm going to target it. So I have a track record of proving, you know, what I'm going to do. Moving forward, we've put steps in the last month and a half that, you know, we've made more changes than ever have in mental health and law enforcement. And I think if you went and asked one of the chiefs of police that are supporting me, they'll tell you this is a very difficult subject. And we have 1,000 people in county jails as of now, over 1,000 people in county jails right now that have been sent by a judge to state hospitals, and there's not room. That shows you how big the problem is, and that over the last 3 months went from 840 to 920 to over 1,000 as of 2 days ago. It is a significant problem that law enforcement is essentially being the can's been kicked to them to deal with, and we're truly not equipped to deal with it. I think just in the last month and a half, and this is, I've said it in at least one, if not both of the forums that I've gone through, is this is my number one priority. It's not the election. The election will run its course and do its thing. Number one is fixing this problem in our community the best we can. And it takes community involvement. And then I think that's why you have people stepping up in the community that are funding a remodel of a facility that A, they know they don't have to, and B, that the county would have to pay for. They've already acknowledged that they're going to do this because this is what I want done. I think the track record over the last month and a half of things that not that I've said I'm going to do, not that I think I'm going to do, I've done. You know, establishing the mental health task force I did, you know, over a year ago. I mean, I brought in professionals in the community that deal with this every day. And I said, look, I'll give you untethered access to the things you want. But what I want from you is you to point out where we need to, you know, what we need to change, from your perspective, from your niche in this community, what we need to change. So all these steps that I've taken are things that, you know, as I mentioned, this white paper going back 4 years, I've been an advocate for the mentally ill for years in this community. And it crushes me that this event happened. And I wish there was a way of changing it. The only way I can change it is change the future. And I think making the changes we've had over this month and a half, where I've had actually operational control, I think speaks for itself. It shows, based on my track record, based on what I've done, that's my number one goal moving forward. And whether or not, you know, on election day things change, what's not going to change is that I still have this as my number one target. And we're going to make the change for the community because it's needed.
That was San Luis Obispo County Sheriff Ian Parkinson speaking with KCBX News. Grant and Mark also spoke with Mental Health and County Jail with the challenger for Slo County Sheriff, Greg Clayton.
Greg Clayton, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
Surely. So just tell us, why do you want the job?
I want this job because we have some major issues occurring, as everyone is aware of, out at our San Luis Obispo County Jail, and some lingering issues out in the field in the Sheriff's Department. There's problems with the leadership. I believe that the public has not been given full accountability on the 12 deaths that have occurred in the last 5 years, which gives us nearly three times the national average for a jail our size in deaths, which is unusual and shouldn't be occurring, because law enforcement is not punitive in nature. And we're supposed to be supportive and respect and care for people and have empathy and compassion for them. And that includes the people that are booked in the county jail. So with the 12 deaths, we also have, as I'm sure most of your listeners are aware of, the torture and killing of Andrew Holland, who was an individual that was in custody on a misdemeanor violation and restrained in a chair with 7 points restraint for 46 straight hours, nude, sitting in his own waste with little food or water. And that was a very compelling reason why I entered this race. And it became more horrifying to me when we learned here recently with the release of the medical records that within an hour of Andrew being placed in that chair, he was sedated. And he received his medication orally and then was given an intramuscular shot of Ativan. And so he was cooperating with the custodial deputies. He was answering his questions appropriately. And so there was absolutely no reason to keep him restrained after he was sedated, much less to keep him restrained through four 12-hour shift rotations, which led to the pulmonary embolism and his death. The other concerns I have is out of the death of Andrew Holland, we have a $5 million settlement, which was unusual because it was settled without a claim and without a lawsuit filed against the County of San Luis Obispo and the Sheriff's Department. That makes it the largest pre-claim settlement in the history of California. That's unusual. We also have a number of lawsuits that are stacking up against the Sheriff and the Sheriff's Department for injuries and deaths that have occurred in the last few years at the Sheriff's Department. We have an FBI investigation that's ongoing for civil rights violations related to the death of Andrew Holland and the 11 other deaths, and I'm sure some of the injuries that have occurred. And most recently, his own Correctional Deputies Association, their union, failed to endorse him as the current sheriff for this election. And what's unusual about that, and I need to point this out to listeners, is the Correctional Deputies leadership of their association, they met with myself, as I'm sure they met with the current sheriff. And we had a lengthy meeting, and then we had to submit in writing our proposals for reform and our visions of how we're going to operate the department and move forward through this fairly serious issues that are going on out there. And that vote, the original vote, was advised to us on April 14th. And we were told that the sheriff was not endorsed by the Correctional Deputies Union, and I anticipated they wouldn't endorse me because they just met me, and so I didn't figure I'd get their endorsement, but they didn't endorse the sheriff that they've worked with for the last 7.5 years. Then there was some pressure brought to bear internally from the Sheriff's Department, and the union was required to do a revote, which is highly unusual. And I believe that came about because of harassment and manipulation by the administration against the leadership of the union, alleging that 9 of the correctional deputies never received a ballot. So it requires a 2/3 vote to endorse, and so they had a second vote, and those results were released on April 28th with the same results, that they failed to endorse the sheriff for this current election.
So you were a police officer, San Luis Obispo, and then you were an investigator for many years. The sheriff is kind of a CEO of a large company. I mean, it's a huge budget, a lot of people working. Do you feel that you're qualified to lead such a department?
Absolutely. Your current sheriff has, which is debatable whether he has a high school diploma or not, because there's information we have received that he has a GED only and no college degree. I graduated from Cal Poly with a degree in political science and a minor in public administration. I started my law enforcement career at the Sheriff's Department in 1978 through 79, working as a reserve deputy. Sheriff George Whiting placed me on temporary hire. I worked the jail, I worked dispatch, and I worked patrol. And then I was hired by San Luis Obispo Police Department, where I had a very busy career over the 13-plus years that I worked there before I was forced out on a disability retirement, which I fought with an attorney, and he lost. And so I was retired out with a 19% disability, which really doesn't impact me in an administrative job. And so for the last 25 years, I've worked for various government agencies, exclusively with the San Luis Obispo County Council's office doing investigations of our local county departments, including the Sheriff's Department, mental health, behavioral health, and just about every other department. I've done internal affairs investigations for probation. I've investigated a prior sheriff. And I've also worked for some of the largest corporations in this nation doing the work for them on defense work on their civil claims for all the insurance companies. I've worked for just about every municipal agency from Salinas south to Ventura and brought cases to successful conclusion working with the attorneys that are assigned to those cases. One of the aspects that I'm used for is in assessing people. And so when I meet and conduct interviews with different witnesses, I also am tasked with assessing them for how they would perform in a courtroom situation to provide testimony. So I've worked on very complex cases for the last 25 years. I have complete knowledge of the disciplinary process used by the County of San Luis Obispo. When it comes to the budget started out with Sheriff Parkinson, started his career as sheriff at $54 million, and now 7.5 years later is $74 million. And 82.5% of that budget is salaries and benefits. And so the budget doesn't bother me. It's a line item budget, and right down the hall from the sheriff's office is the fiscal department, and they have six people there that work full-time on the budget. And what you have with the sheriff's department is chain of command. And just similar to the time that I spent in the United States Navy Seabees with the military chain of command, it's very similar. And so everyone has a span of control of 5 to 7 people. Everybody has their responsibilities. So the sheriff is going to have be in a position with two top deputies to administer the different areas of the sheriff's department. And he's going to have someone, I'm going to appoint a warden, to operate the jail. That span of control there then filters down through the chain of command. And I can tell everyone, the sheriff can take, and any department in this nation of the 3,000 sheriff's departments, the sheriff can take 2-week vacation, and the sheriff's department operates 24/7 while they're gone. My vision is to come in and provide solid, stable leadership to the department, bring common sense back into the room. We don't restrain people and hold them like they did with Andrew Holland. And there's countless other tales of folks that have been placed in that chair in the past. Fortunately, they survived, but they're now terrified from that experience. So we're going to eliminate that type of restraint in the jail. We're going to cut way back on isolation because that's one of the worst things you can do to anyone, and especially someone with mental illness, because they begin to decompensate and their condition worsens. I want to have the vision that we're going to switch from a punitive environment in the jail to a supportive environment in the jail. So there's no brutality. There's no excess force. We are there to be committed to the well-being and safety of every inmate that's in custody. We also provide them with job skills. We provide them with the therapies they need for substance use disorder. We make sure that they're treated if they're mentally ill, and we make sure if they have any medical needs, they're treated. All these things are required by state and federal law.
How do you plan on doing that? Because there, as Parkinson has repeatedly said, there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to send these inmates. There just isn't the facility. The PUF in Andrew Holland's case was apparently all beds were full. Where do you plan on sending? Are you gonna make like a new mental health unit in the jail, or how do you propose to?
Yes, absolutely. That's my proposal. And my concern is that we overbuilt the new woman's jail, 196 beds, with an average female inmate population between 30 and 50. We have room. And so what I would like to do is set up a 10 to 20 psychiatric care unit on site and have that staffed with psychiatric nurses, psychiatric technicians, and a doctor 24/7 so that we can care for the mentally ill inmates on site, and we don't have to transport, and we're not dependent on the PUF unit on Johnson Avenue or on ASH. Now, there'll be certain cases where we still have to go to ASH based on judge's orders.
And that's at Tascadero State Hospital.
Yes, Tascadero State Hospital. But it's important to note that when I started in law enforcement in 1978, the PUF unit had 11 beds. It's 2018, and now we have 16. And then they opened 4 emergency beds in a building out back. The rule of thumb is for every 100,000 people you have in population, you need 50 psychiatric beds. We're way short of that in this county. So we need a commitment of public policy to fund psychiatric care facilities in this county. We're very deficient in that regard. I think that we have the room at the jail to accommodate our needs at the jail to provide temporary care of anybody suffering from the mentally ill illness that needs our treatment. And that would preclude us ever having to wait to transport someone, unless we're under specific judge's order, to transport to Tascadero State Hospital. I think it's important that we are able to provide in-house all the treatment that any inmate would need, short of having to take them to the hospital, obviously, for advanced medical care, so that we can reduce the injuries, reduce the suffering, and not have any situation where we're being punitive in nature to these inmates. Because the goal here is to return them back to society a better person, a whole person, if possible, so that we cut back the recidivism rate and we reduce the jail population. If we're successful with doing these programs with the help of all the community-based organizations that are offering these programs for us, if we're successful, then we reduce the population of the jail, the recidivism rate drops dramatically, and that saves the taxpayers a tremendous amount of money.
That was San Luis Obispo County Sheriff candidate Greg Clayton in conversation with KCBX News Director Greta Mart. You can listen to more about the sheriff's race as well as other Central Coast races on the June 5th primary ballot over at KCBX.org. We're going to take a short break, and when we